One of the most exciting scientific findings of the past half century has been the discovery of widespread trophic cascades. A trophic cascade is an ecological process which starts at the top of the food chain and tumbles all the way down to the bottom. And the classic example is what happened in the Yellowstone National Park in the United States when wolves were reintroduced in 1995. Now, we all know that wolves kill various species of animals, but perhaps we're slightly less aware that they give life to many others.
Hello again, both crew and passengers on the mothership, and welcome to the newsletter from Gaiaspora.org, offering Gnostic intel and Sophianic insight on events and issues of today. This is issue number 2, presented by your friendly homegrown telestes, John Lash. The title is Humanity's Finest Hour. In consideration of the main topic, I chose to use some haunting and enchanting howls from a wolf pack to introduce this newsletter. Those enchanting sounds, truly blood-curdling in the best sense of the term, come from a short clip on wolves that were introduced into Yellowstone National Park in the United States in 1995. And you'll see the link to that clip is provided in the text notes that go along with the talking part of the newsletter. I invite you to consider that the sound of wolves baying for blood announces the coming of the Calico War Party. Now, bear in mind that I've established a separate platform for the Calico War Party, so I will not be using the newsletter for that purpose. However, I, needless to say, will be often referring to the KWP in the course of these written and spoken presentations. How does the sound of wolves baying for blood relate to humanity's finest hour? Well, I invite you to consider that the appearance of the Calico War Party in the fall and winter of 2014 is proof that we have reached the finest hour of our species. And I ask you also, in a little exercise of dreaming contemplation, to consider the bizarre development in which a solitary Andean puma, who is never yet seen by human eyes and never to be, might telepathically be guiding a pack of wolves who range across the planet, intent on taking down the human animals who have turned against their own species. So, in support of that lovely little contemplation, I have provided a picture of an Andean puma on the prowl at night, although it's probably photoshopped. But it reminds you that the presence of the moon guides the Calico War Party as it guided the GNE. And it may remind you as well of the stealth and solitude of that puma. You know, there are pumas in the Andes which are presumed to be there by traces they leave, but they have never in fact had a human eye set on them, and so they live and die without ever being seen by a human animal. And I ask you to consider the metaphorical implications of that fact. Okay, so let's move ahead. I have my system down so that I can scroll through the WordPress document presenting the text that accompanies each talk when I present the newsletter. And the topics that I discuss come as you scroll through the newsletter. The topics I have decided to adopt the convention of introducing or signaling the topics by capital letters. So, donations and support. Well, I thank all of you hugely for the support and for the financial donations that you're making. Every single cent counts, I can assure you of that. I've also noticed that there have been occasional difficulties in recurring donations and single one-time donations, both. This is due to some glitches or technicalities in the PayPal process. I'm totally unfamiliar with it, but fortunately, thanks to my technical wizard Mario from Croatia, those problems will be sorted quite soon. So I thank you for your patience in that matter. Some of you have had to try several times to get your donations over into my little sandbox. I really can't tell you how much it means to me to have a little bit of latitude and some relief from the overwhelm that is typical of a life in Planetary Tantra and typical of the humble and unassuming challenge which I've undertaken, that is to say, to orchestrate the first attention of the entire human race. So a little bit of latitude, a little bit of slack, of course, is welcome at any given day, as you would well imagine. And the process of support that I'm now receiving allows me to work, give my attention, and work with individuals and teams who implement the teachings, the methodology, and the Gnostic direction that I can deliver. So you see, that for me is the ideal setup. So the Turton delivers, and those in his entourage implement. And I guess that puts me, sort of, edges me a little bit, you might say, toward the traditional situation of Turtonhood, as you see it in Buddhist, Tibetan Buddhist tradition, because the great Turtons, as far as I know, starting with Jigme Lingpa, although he was not historically the first, always had an entourage to assist him in handling the material. The auspicious event of the moment entails a visit from GNE crew member Holly, who was actually one of the five initial members of the GNE. And it was Holly herself who said, standing right out here on the terrace of the Turton's palace, we seek no more, we implement what is found. Anyway, that's a close paraphrase to what she said this afternoon. One step in this implementation is to establish Terma Publishing, which Holly and I have done just in the last 24 hours. So this is exciting, and I'll be reporting on what projects we are undertaking so that you can track what we're doing and know where your support is going. Now, I'd like to start out going through the topics that I've written down in the textual part of this newsletter, beginning with the concept or metaphor, if you will, of the burn mark. As noted in the previous newsletter, you can visualize the photographic image of the Crab Nebula as a burn mark on a film that has stalled in front of the projector bulb due to mechanical failure. Now, the light that projects the film on the screen then burns through the image projected. This is a metaphor for the power of divine imagination streaming from the horn tips of the bull, burning through the layered films of social narrative, and burning away the fabric of lies that clutters the exopsyche, or collective consciousness of the human species. And as I've explained on numerous occasions, and other people as well who know nothing of my work and who are not coming from a Gnostic perspective have also explained, that the narrated film is a prevailing method of mind control. Primary example of that, of course, is 9/11. 9/11, the delivery of the psyop of 9/11, because it was a psyop as well as a physical event. In fact, I've said before, I believe I brought this up in the talks with Judy Wood, Dr. Judy Wood, that 9/11 was, as a psyop, more destructive to the human mind than it was destructive on the physical plane at the World Trade Center Ground Zero. And that was one hell of a lot of destruction, which is, in fact, inexplicable in terms of what we know about physics today. But the destruction to the human mind by that psyop was even greater, in my opinion. Now, I will occasionally include in the newsletter some GNE intel, that is to say, some astronomical information closely related to the navigational parameters of the GNE, but you don't have to follow that if you don't wish to. It is not required material for passengers, and you may not want to go there, and that's fine. So I'm always going to put it in brackets. In this instance, however, the GNE intel relative to the exact position of the Crab Nebula in the constellation of the Bull and relative to the idea or theme of the Morbido connected with the north horn of the Bull marked by the star Elnat and Libido connected to the south horn of the Bull marked by the star Alheka links to a beautiful and informative documentary about Wilhelm Reich, Man's Right to Know. And that is worth seeing for those of you who have not already viewed it. I reference some information around that shows up around minute 5:20 coming from old Sigi Shlomo Freud, in which Freud proposed that libido, the sexual, neurological, sexual, biological drive in the human animal, quote, extends itself over the memory traces of an idea. Now, Freud's teachings did a great deal of harm to our understanding of the human psyche. But there were, as I've noted before, a couple of things that he said, a couple of clues that he leaked, which proved to be, upon extended scrutiny and deconstruction, nevertheless extremely valuable. So the connection between libido and the functions of memory is one of those. And I would just point this out to you for further development in another newsletter coming probably in a month or two. That newsletter would concern the eruptions out of the endopsyche of humanity of phylogenetic memory. I can report on the basis of telestic examination, telestic investigation, if you prefer, that the libido of the planetary animal mother is indeed deeply connected and dynamically linked to her memory, which is the phylogenetic memory circuit in the human animal. Or to be more precise, the memory of the wisdom goddess herself runs through the phylogenetic memory circuit represented and embodied by the human animal. Reflect on those words. So it follows then that if there is a dynamic between her libido and phylogenetic memory, more commonly known as folk memory, then that dynamic is two-way. What do I mean by that? Simply that as her libido increases, the faculty of phylogenetic memory recall increases, and vice versa. Now, that is a lovely proposition to contemplate, and I'll leave you with that tantalizing clue to be picked up in a future newsletter. And if I don't pick it up before the next month and a half, please give me a nudge so that I can remind myself. Okay? Deal? Now, as I record these words, I'm taking a moment to break my pace, which is a dangerous undertaking for me, as you may know. But I'm getting the hang of how to coordinate the talk and the text. So as I speak, things come up, and they're not always in the text. So I'm taking a moment to insert, as you can see here, a quotation from what I wrote regarding the Gaia mythos way back in 2004, 10 years ago. Quote, "What then is the relation of Gaia, the earth goddess, to Mnemosyne, the goddess of memory? This question may hold the initial clue to the role of humanity in Gaia's purposes," end quote. And if you want to go more into the background of that statement, go to Sharing the Gaia Mythos and Sources of the Gaia Mythos on metahistory.org. Finally, as just a short footnote, but an extremely important one to my mind, regarding Wilhelm Reich, you will find that some people today who are tracing the foundations of political correctness as a tool of deceit and domination used by so-called Jews, you will find that they trace it back to the Frankfurt School. Political correctness, as we now know it, can be traced back to the Frankfurt School. And those who do so with a particular mindfulness to the destructive effect of the Jewish influence in the non-Jewish world point to certain participants of the Frankfurt School as if they were agents of this Jewish subversion of the Goy. Well, in many cases that is true, but when they throw Wilhelm Reich into the pot and represent Reich as a typical agent of the Frankfurt School, and particularly when they represent Reich or infer that Reich was an agent of Jewish corruption of morals, widely noted in the history of the Third Reich, they are absolutely wrong. He was nothing of the sort, and he should not be considered in the category of the other Frankfurt School proponents. I don't even think he belonged to the Frankfurt School. He was entirely a lone wolf. Reich was a wolf whose main mission in life was to protect the biological birthright of humanity to develop itself without interference. So it's absolutely wrong to include him or to label him as a proponent of corruption of the Goyim. And that word corruption, I don't know exactly what the German word is, but that word corruption was widely used, both corruption and corrosion, in Hitler's regime in reference to certain activities against the Goyim and the Aryan peoples in general. On that note, on that topic, which is going to come up now and then in the news letters, so brace yourselves, my friends, me mates and passengers, I would add a further point of clarification going into the controversy. You know, I know that I open myself up to be dismissed as a pro-Hitlerian. In fact, I've been warned by one person who wrote me at JLL that I would jeopardize all the other teaching I presented if I come out taking a pro-Hitler stand? Well, my answer to that is, if what I say in the pro-Hitler stand, in quotes, is true, then I'm willing to risk my entire reputation for truth. Okay? I have no problem with it. But let me make it clear to you already, those of you who already give me your attention and have a certain trust and confidence in my, you know, my teachings, if you will, I am not anti-Semitic or anti-Jew. I am against the dominance and prevalence of Jewish power and influence in the non-Jewish world. That's all. I am anti-pro-Jew. I am against everything that favors the role of Jews in non-Jewish society rather than giving the advantage to the goyim to run their own affairs. Is that simple enough? And so I've coined the term JAWS to describe my position. I am anti-JAWS. You know, JAWS by Steven Spielberg, who happens to have been a posaji, that is to say, a person of self-assigned Jewish identity. JAWS, coming up from below, ready to devour the unsuspecting swimmer, right? Well, I am warning against JAWS. I am taking a position against JAWS. And what is JAWS? It's an acronym for Jewish Anti-White Supremacy. So that's what I'm against. I'm not against Jews as such or any single human being on this planet who happens to consider themselves a Jew for whatever reason. So make that clear, and Matt, perhaps that will make you or allow you to be a little more comfortable with an extremely uncomfortable subject. So, moving on. To return to the metaphor of the burn mark, let's consider what might be called empirical proof right out there in the light of day of the metaphor. Recall, or let me put it in the form of a question, recall that discourse concerning that metaphor. If the light of divine imagination is burning through the narrated film, what is the evidence it is doing so? Well, I offer right out of the moment a couple of items of evidence or proof. Okay, first item. Link to a little YouTube clip showing scuba divers examining Junkers, which are World War II German military planes that were found almost intact underwater off the coast of Croatia. This is photographic evidence of burning through the narration that was distorted and repressed regarding the Second World War, with the intention to bury or sink, you catch the allusion, to sink the truth about what Germany really did and what Hitler really did during World War II, by contrast to what the world has been told that they did. And you can't find in my present moment of imagination, I would say that you can't find any evidence, concrete evidence, more clear and vivid than the discovery of these airplanes. It's not just a fluke that divers have found these airplanes. It's a return to the memory of what happens. It's a cueing from historical oblivion. Let me see how I can say it better. This photographic evidence is a cueing of the historical oblivion that has been imposed upon humanity regarding the real facts and the real evidence of what happened in World War II. And how wonderful is that? Now, I just want to exercise a little of my atrocious and notorious self-importance at this moment. I wouldn't let a newsletter go by, almost never, without, of course, indulging in my self-importance. Would I? But let me point out to you, my friends, and I don't even care if you're not my friends, I'm going to point it out, that I can demonstrate before the world, I, John Lash, can demonstrate existential, documentary, historical, or scientific proof of the metaphor. And I am so proud that I can do that, because in doing so, I am demonstrating how to fulfill the method of creative mythology that was prefigured by Joseph Campbell. And I invite anyone on this planet to challenge or trump me on the demonstration or revelation of this method. That is the revelation of our method. And I challenge anyone to excel me in the application of this method or to refute it. Now let's pass on to the second item of evidence of the burn mark, that the light of divine imagination pouring into human memory, pouring through the memory circuit provided by the human species insofar as dreaming, is burning through the lies of the narrated film. Second item is connected with a correspondence that I had recently with a gentleman, writer and historian, an independent renegade known as M.T. Goodrich. So he wrote me on September 21st, which was the date of newsletter number one, on the subject of the darkest secret of history, and I include his email here. And he signed off as Tom Goodrich. So you see that his email relates to his book, Hellstorm, which tells the real story of what happened to Germany during and after World War II. Okay? Story that you have never been allowed. No one who's hearing my words now, I guarantee you, has ever been allowed to know this story. And so I responded to Tom Goodrich, and you'll see my response by email is contained there. And I posed him a couple of questions, particularly about the Poznan speech of Himmler and Operation Reinhardt, you know. And, of course, he responded in a polite and honest fashion by explaining, as I expected he would respond, by explaining that he is not an expert on what happened regarding the so-called Jewish Holocaust, and that is not the purpose of his book, and that is clearly the case. So he did not provide answers to those questions regarding Himmler and the intention among some of the German staff of the Third Reich to eliminate all people who called themselves Jews and proved themselves to be Jews by their behavior. And even though that may be the case, and it certainly was the case with Himmler, it does not prove that the leader of the Third Reich himself, Adolf Hitler, either conceived or executed a final solution against the Jewish people. So this is a really important detail. I link you also to the interview of Tom Goodrich with Kyle Hunt of Renegade Broadcasting. Kyle recently contacted me. I've had some exchanges with the five individuals, I believe there are five, the core group of Renegade Broadcasting, who are located in the United States. And this is a group of historical revisionists, brilliant young Americans, who are on the verge of doing some tremendous work. And I will be responding to Kyle. I am responding to Kyle Hunt's request for an interview soon. And that occasion will allow me to sort out and clarify my views on the question of white genocide and on the accusations of white supremacy, which might be leveled toward me. So you can anticipate that interview to be coming your way soon. Moving on now to a couple of minor items. You may have noted that Channel 16 Forum has been entirely deleted. Now, the Channel 16 Forum was set up during the GNE uniquely and specifically for the purpose of exchanges between those who would like to make communications and telepathy. The premise and purpose of Channel 16 was just as simple as that. Let's see if we can use Channel 16 and the call sign and the method of a message and an image as a way to develop our telepathic faculties. And over 2 years, a considerable number of people provided and developed a massive amount of material on Channel 16. I'm sad to report that, unfortunately, the administrator of that channel deleted and didn't just remove or suspend, but deleted all of that material. So the record of participants in that telepathy experiment has been lost. And this to me is sad, it's unfortunate, and I'm pretty pissed off about it. I just want you to know that it happened without any warning, and without any communication between me and the admin of Channel 16. That individual could easily have turned over the forum to someone else. He could easily have informed me of whatever his reasons were for being unable to continue. But as I wrote him in an email, and I won't go into all this crap, but I want you to know that I wrote him in an email saying that the material that he removed was not his to destroy. So, too bad for him that he did that. But we move on, and certainly I'm confident that Channel 16 was a fruitful experiment. I'm confident that it provided many discoveries and insights for the people involved, and in some manner or another, I am confident that it will resurrect or represent itself as correction proceeds. And I want to convey a huge thanks to all those who contributed over more than 2 years to Channel 16 to develop it into what it was and will be again. Another minor detail concerns the astrological website or blog called Oracle Report. I've had some exchanges with the author of Oracle Report. That would be a professional astrological consultant or consulting astrologer, if you prefer, Laura Walker. Now, I'm not going to go into the ins and outs and the back and forth of this exchange. It was not an elaborate exchange. It consisted of about 3 emails, I think, from Laura Walker to myself and 3 or 4 from me to her. Anyway, please note, for the purposes of accuracy, that on September 9th, she wrote to me saying, quote, "The only information I have read about the Mahavidyas on the internet is from your sites," end quote. So, there follows my clarification, which is word by word, from the email I sent to her on September 14th. My only concern about the Oracle Report, as you may infer from this message I sent her, is that some students of PT, Planetary Tantra, who consult the Oracle Report may associate it with Planetary Tantra. Now, Laura Walker herself doesn't really do that. She uses some correlations between the astrological signs, not the constellations, to the Mahavidyas of the Sri Vidya mysticism of southern India. And in doing so, she takes those correlations or the information for those correlations from my writings. However, Let me make it absolutely clear that I do not accuse Laura Walker of claiming that her material on Oracle Report represents in any way, shape, or form Planetary Tantra. She does not make that claim. So in fact, Laura, if you're listening to these words, you don't have to put a disclaimer on your site that dissociates you from Planetary Tantra. The only reference that I have found on Oracle Report to Planetary Tantra is a link to the Fallen Goddess scenario. Well, that's cool. That's okay. I'm a Gnostic. I practice peaceful coexistence. My only concern was that some followers of Planetary Tantra who are learning the correlations between the Mahavidyas and Diamond Sky Dakinis with the constellations, and who are learning to follow the Dakini shifts, might be confused by your material, thinking that it represents an extension of Planetary Tantra, or in some fact, in some manner, that it repeats and develops the correlations of Dakini shifts in Planetary Tantra. It certainly does not. So just let me say as a final word that those of you who follow my work who may look at Oracle Report should take what you can get from it. And if you like that kind of astrological material, it's fine with me. I don't have a competing attitude. I don't have a competing attitude in that respect. But I just want you to know that what you find on that site could be misleading, and it could queer your efforts to learn the Dakini shifts, because the shifts as Laura Walker treats them are not the shifts as they are handled and described in Planetary Tantra. Okay, enough said. Now, continuing to move through the written notes, there are a couple of other topics or items to cover before I sashay into the main topic of humanity's finest moment. Gender rift. This is an upcoming topic I look forward to treating in the newsletters to come. Just want to point out for something for the purpose of your general orientation. The topic of the gender rift is part of the Fallen Goddess scenario. It goes back to that mythological moment in pre-terrestrial history, before the Earth was formed, that is, when a momentous event took place in this arm of the galaxy where the solar system and the Earth eventually arose, the third arm of the four or five spiral arms of our galaxy, sometimes called the Orion Galaxy. Well, that event in the life of the Aeon Sophia was dramatic and traumatic, to say the least. The manner in which I've represented that event is an elaboration of the received material. So what I've done in that elaboration is entirely transparent. As you know, I want everyone who follows my teaching about the Fallen Goddess scenario to know exactly how I'm handling it. There's no sleight of hand here, folks. I'm not trumping or contriving the material behind your back and then turning around presenting it as something that it is not. I think I've been explicitly clear in explaining those parts of the Fallen Goddess scenario taken directly from the received material in Coptic and Greek sources, and those parts where I have spun, elaborated, or extrapolated that material. The gender rift is one of those parts. What I've done in adding the mytheme of the gender rift to the Fallen Goddess scenario is quite simple. I have drawn upon the description of the fall found in Irenaeus. Based upon that passage, I have shown that the materialization of the divine luminosity of the Aeons of Fire into the material elements of the planet Earth, as described by Irenaeus, is, or entailed, I should say, a momentous event in which Sophia, as it were, tore through the Anthropos template that was deposited in the Orion Nebula. She either tore through it or by close proximity to it, due to her fascination and love for her darling, the Anthropos, in such a manner that she rendered or rifted the genome. And so when the Aeon Sophia shapeshifted from the naked form of her organic light substance into the planetary form of the Earth, she brought with her to Earth certain components of the Anthropos template and not others. And this bizarre event resulted in the emergence in very, very remote times after the Cambrian explosion, I believe, of a female species derived from the Anthropos template that was exclusive to the Earth, the Gaian women, the Gaian she, S-I-D-H-E, to cite the Celtic word. And that is to say, as various shamanic traditions around the world have attested, that the first inhabitants of this planet were exclusively women. That's the gender rift. The men came later, descending, as it were, on Akka cords, A-C-C-A, hyphen, cord, and they arrived as hunters in the terrestrial paradise of the Earth, which was inhabited solely by women. So this is the romance, the Chthonian romance that I have cited and that I have developed carefully within the Fallen Goddess scenario 2.0, 3.0, and counting, okay? And I did that by taking the widely known mytheme of the division of the sexes and melding it or merging it into the mythological material of the sacred narrative, okay? Now, with that background, let me tell you that I consider it to be extremely significant that the gender rift is a subject that is coming up in our faces vividly, ferociously, as correction proceeds. One example, one proof, if you will, that correction is underway is that many, many, countless thousands and thousands of people are engaging themselves passionately in the controversy of men's rights versus feminism. So there is, you may not know about this, but there is a massive movement taking place called the MRA, Men's Rights Advocacy, and also a movement called the MGTOW, M-G-T-O-W, Men Going Their Own Way. And these two acronyms, MRA and MGTOW, M-G-T-O-W, are current events in the exopsyche of the human animal that may be regarded as revealing an attempt to tackle the problem of the gender rift. Now, I myself have a very different view of how to tackle that problem and how to resolve and heal the gender rift. So, although I am checking in every now and then on this MRA activity and the massive blowback against feminism that is now underway, and thank goddess for that, although I'm checking in and following these matters mainly on YouTube channels, I want you to know that I don't consider that they are the solution. It's a lot of blather and babble and groping attempts toward a solution and toward righting the balance in the gender rift problem, okay? So I'd like to warn you or alert you to the fact that I'll be taking up this topic in future newsletters, but for right now, if you want to get a little preview and familiarize yourself with it, I've indicated a couple of links. One of them is to the YouTube channel Shieldwife. Now, this woman, whoever she is, whatever her background is, however she presents herself to the world, is, in my view, so far, an eloquent advocate of men's rights and an eloquent and sober adversary of the insane excesses of feminism, which, by the way, is a Jewish subversion of proper relation between the sexes in the goyim. Okay? So you have Shield Wife, and there's a link to her talk about why women are such spoiled brats. And I'll also link you to Diana Davison, whose site is Feminism LOL, and she's a Canadian MRA. Okay? These are just two examples. Now, if you want to go look at the adversaries, that is to say the women who are fighting for feminism still and bashing men and demonizing the male gender, then just go look at Feminist Frequency, which is led by Anita Sarkeesian. And you'll find, if you pull up that channel on the right side of your screen, YouTube will provide many link channels of other women who are the adversaries of the MRA women and who are defending feminism against the escalating wave of blowback. I expect feminism, some people say it's already finished. Would it were so, we can dream, can't we? I expect feminism to be absolutely demolished within a year. And that is good news for both men and women. As for my part, as I bring up the subject of the gender rift in future newsletters, I'm going to talk about what I consider to be the solution to the gender rift. And let me give you a little preview of that right here. In the first place, the gender rift is proven to be healed, or shown to be healed, when women can speak for men and men can speak for women. Secondly, the evidence of the fact that the solution of the gender rift has already been found by the human species comes in the historical, cultural, literary, and spiritual events of the 12th century. Okay? So in the 12th century of chronology, according to the Christian calendar, certain men and women who belong to the cult of Amor and to the troubadour movement, which existed all over Europe, from the Scandinavian countries down into Andalusia, those men and women found the solution to the gender rift. And they found it in what I call romantic individualism. So I have a lot to say about that in the future. And if I fail to bring up that subject, please nudge me. Or if you have specific questions relative to that subject of romantic individualism and the cult of Amor, send me a message and let me know. And I'll see if I can take up your queries in the forthcoming talks. Finally, as last item to consider before I move into the main theme and conclude this newsletter, I'd like to mention two things which are closely related, that is, first, the seeker's syndrome, and second, the controlled opposition to enlightenment. Now, I'm providing a link to an individual whom I would describe as a self-important blowhard that even puts me to shame, Mark Passio. In this clip, he is talking about alchemy, and at minute 10 of this hour and 20-minute interview, he gives his definition of what alchemy is. And you can go listen to it yourself, but here's my paraphrase. This is what Mark Passio says alchemy is, and there are many, many people who purport to talk about alchemy or explain it who would, I am sure, agree with him. He says it is simply a path or practice toward knowing oneself. Well, I'm not going to elaborate at this moment in this newsletter, but let me make it loud and clear that I couldn't disagree more on that definition of alchemy. And I intend to show in future talks in which I may cite Mark Passio and others that that view of alchemy, a subject that lies at the heart of Gayan Tantra, flagrantly displays the narcissism of our time and attests, moreover, to an appalling ignorance of the true physics of planetary mysticism. And anyone who takes the viewpoint that alchemy is a path or practice toward knowing oneself reveals that they are completely out of the game, and they have not only just lost the plot, but they never had it in the first place. So I look forward to talking about what I call the seeker's syndrome and doing so. I would refer back to this talk by Mark Passio and to other talks that I might cite which demonstrate the flagrant display of this seeker's syndrome. And the seeker's syndrome, just to give it to you in a nutshell, is the prevalent view that it's the journey, not the goal. Have you heard that before? Oh, it's the journey, not the goal. Okay? Well, I intend to refute that little proposition in no uncertain terms. And so be prepared for that coming along sometime in the near future. I'm not going to go into the question now of what are Mark Passio's qualifications for his presumption to come out and say anything at all about alchemy. You know, what is the resume of his quest that has led him to this way of characterizing alchemy? I'll just leave that for later, or maybe I'll just blow it off entirely. But the subject of the seeker's syndrome is an important one. And closely related to that is what I would call controlled opposition to enlightenment. Now, this is coming up strongly in my sights. I guess I could say that as due to my position in rank one of the Calico War Party, it's not a hierarchical ranking, by the way, it's a functional ranking. But due to my position in rank one, which is front and center in the first line of engagement of five lines of engagement in the Thunderbird formation of the party, that my role in the party is defined by the targets that I undertake. So I can tell you right now that one of my key targets is Buddhism, including both traditional Hinayana, the lesser vehicle, Theravada Buddhism, and the whole range of Mahayana Buddhism, which is probably a development of Gnosticism in northern India, all the way up to the top dogs or top cats of Tantrayana and Vajrayana, that is to say, Tibetan Buddhism, all these dudes are coming up in my sights, and I intend to take them out in a spectacular fashion. To use a British expression, which I'm kind of beginning to like, these people, from the Dalai Lama to Chandra La, all the way down the line, are really getting on my tits. So, you can anticipate a few genteel and carefully phrased propositions coming from the main tartan and directed toward that crew of, I don't know what to call them. They're not really spoilers. They're just a crew of worthless parasites who have no conscience, who demonstrate by their behavior that they lack conscience. Parasites who have nothing of value to say, either about the question of suffering on this planet or the fact of suffering and the fact of intra-species predation or the fact of deception, division, and domination orchestrated by those members of the human species who have declared themselves as superior to the rest of the human species. Nothing to say of value about any of that, or anything at all. So, you can anticipate that the moment is coming when I show that Buddhism is totally useless, except as a pretext for a bunch of men to get a free ride on this planet. And like I said, oh, here goes. It comes to me. Like I said, I wouldn't call them spoilers. What am I going to call them? That's another subject. They're already in my coils. Naga. Coils. But what am I going to call them who are in my coils? Well, take a little bit of Brit syntax from a YouTube channel and from the mouth of Davine La Vérité, and I'll call them tossers. So I'll say, these Buddhist tossers are getting on my tits. That says it pretty well. Now, as the moment comes along, the moment rolls our way, when I address myself to that topic, let me make 2 points absolutely clear. When I say I'm taking out the Buddhists from the Dalai Lama on down the line, I don't mean to be stating a physical threat. I am making no physical threat upon anyone. So to take them out does not mean physical harm. Rather, I intend to take them out of their own minds. I intend to drive them out of their own minds by the flick of my naga coils. You got that? And anyone who thinks that that is outrageously ridiculous, well, I invite you to hang on and see just how I do it. But I want to make also a clarification regarding why I would do that. Is it simply due to personal animosity, or I'm irritated, or I don't get the attention I think I deserve as the Turton who delivered the paramount terma on this planet? No, I don't have any personal animosity toward them. In my ongoing presentations in these newsletters, I operate from Gnostic intel and from the necessities and exigencies that Gnostic intel carries, okay? I can tell you right now, I can tell the entire world, and I'm happy to do so, that regarding our quantic intrusion upon the human species, there have been two enormous successes by the extraterrestrial parasitic cyborg mind parasites. One of those successes is well known to you. It is stated in the Gnostic warning that Yaldabaoth, the Lord Archon, cut a deal with a certain small segment of the human species who came to be known as Jews. That's given the evidence of that success by the Archons is given in the Gnostic materials, in the received materials. I add to that, on the basis of my telestic shamanic investigations, a second very great and unfortunate fact. Long prior to the intervention into the ancient Hebrews, by which the Archons took advantage of them as a vector species to attack humanity, there was a previous intervention around somewhere between 18,000 and 16,000 BC. And that intervention is still operating today in what we call Buddhism, and particularly in Tibetan Buddhism. So there were two successes at intervention into the human mind by the Archons. The first one occurred in the Himalayan regions of northern India. The long-term repercussion and the long-term after effects of that intervention can be seen today in the institutions of Buddhism, and I intend to prove it. Okay, that said, I'm standing here in the Navigator's little room at dawn on the 5th of October 2014 at 8:15 in the presence of my beloved cats, Nikita and Rumi. And I would like to tell you now, in the next 15 or so minutes, why I consider this to be humanity's finest moment. I ask you to recall the little clip and the sound effects, if you will, that I use to introduce this newsletter. Why can the sound of wolves baying for blood be considered as a sign that humanity or some members of humanity have reached its finest moment? Well, I propose to you that the moment when some members of the human species would risk their lives to protect the entire human species and bay for the blood of those who by their own declarations, either verbally, ideologically, or by the declaration of their behavior, stand against humanity, I would say that the moment when that happens, that moment, that culminating instant of conscience and courage is indeed the finest moment. And I can tell you by the testimony of my flesh and blood that we are at that moment. To put it simply, my friends, it's about fucking time that somebody took responsibility for what's happening on this planet It's about fucking time to get beyond blaming and finger pointing and actually do something. It's time for the counterattack, and that is humanity's finest moment. When some members of the species attack that which threatens to and intends to destroy even the possibility of a sane and safe way of life on this planet. When I say counterattack, I mean it in every sense of the term. From the lethal strike against identified targets down to the enormous task of counterattacking the many forms of insanity that are operating in human society, such as you see demonstrated day to day and moment to moment in religion, politics, the mindfuck of the media, the narcissistic masturbations of the new age, the misdirection and appeasement of Buddhism and other pacifist philosophies, such as you see in all that, etc., 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 and blah, blah, blah. Humanity's finest moment comes when the blah, blah, blah ends and somebody actually does something. Not only or not just to expose the orchestrations of social evil, but to oppose the orchestrations of social evil. And let me make it clear to you that that opposition is person to person. It's personal. The agents of the system are caught in the illusion of the system. The illusion of the system tells them that everyone who represents and acts in behalf of the authorities is going to be protected by the authorities, and they can do whatever they damn please to the people targeted by the system. Humanity's finest moment comes when that proposition, that illusion, is overturned. But I'm not going to use the passive voice. And you watch, you just watch what happens in the course of these newsletters as I learn how to practice Vak Siddhi. Not to use the future tense or the passive voice. So what did I just say? Go back and replay it. I said, dot, 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 those who are targeted by the system. No, that's passive voice. Those whom the system targets, that's not passive voice. The problem with passive voice, go listen to the mainstream media, go listen to the alternative media. The problem with passive voice is that it never identifies the agencies that are actually operating. Go make a study of that, and you'll see what I mean. And I invite you to come along with me as John Lash, one single human animal, learns to demonstrate and master the occult ability conferred upon him at the age of 17 by his guardian, Kali. And that is Vak Siddhi. Go look it up. Vaksiddhi. It means not the power of prediction to say what will come to be. It means the power of predication. What does that mean? It means that by the very act of stating something, I cause it to happen. And when I am able to demonstrate Vox City, you're going to know, if you choose to be involved, that this really is humanity's finest moment. Because the minute I can demonstrate it, both with the people who come and see me and meet me, first person, and with you through the archontic medium of communication I'm using, at that moment that I demonstrate Vox City, that one telestic shaman gnostic slash tantrika does so, it communicates immediately and fractally to everyone who hears it. Humanity's finest moment is the worst conceivable moment in human history, in all known and memorable history. This is the worst fracking moment that anyone has ever lived. And it is just at that moment, at the worst possible conceivable moment, that the very best in humanity proves itself. It proves itself, my friends. It's about proof. And so I want to say that I am deeply confident that that moment has arrived. I know it because of the emergence of the Kalika War Party and the signal of wolves baying for blood. I know it in another way, because that moment comes when it is possible for those who have the attention to receive raw, real-time Gnostic intel. Now, if you compare the fallen goddess scenario with the disclosure of the archontic infection that I presented on the Red Ice interview on the anniversary of the Term of Gaia Awakening, then you will recognize that there is a difference between the Gnostic intel in the FGS and that more recent intel. Well, what is the difference? Well, the intel in the FGS is largely based on received material. It refers to the past. It draws upon what the Gnostic telestai of the mystery schools achieved. But the intel about the archontic infection, that is the neural hack by which those extraterrestrial parasites achieved direct access to the auditory cortex of the human brain, that is raw, real-time Gnostic intel. Such intel is incomparable on this planet, if I do say so myself. And such intel is your privilege to know and your responsibility to handle. Such is the mission impossible of humanity's finest moment. I assure you, those who can sink into the depths of what I'm saying right now, that you don't need to burden yourselves or hold yourself responsible for acquiring that intel. You may or may not reach the point where you can acquire that intel. This is just a fact, and it's a hard fact in the conditions of our time. How do you, or I, or anyone acquire such intel? The answer is simple. There's only one way, and that is by the telestic method, to encounter the organic light and receive instruction from the light. That experience of encountering the organic light is the attainment of the Holy Grail, and it is that and nothing else. It has nothing to do about knowing yourself in some mysterious and elusive way. It has nothing to do with the never-ending process of seeking for an ultimate goal of self-realization that you never achieve. This is a goal that you can achieve. It's a goal that I've achieved. And so, if we can agree on the source of this Gnostic intel, perhaps we can also agree on the responsibility to carry it forward. That is how you participate in the solution of the Aeons of Fire, whether or not you happen to be the person, the individual, the telestes, who can receive that instruction. Please understand me on that point. You know, it is a very great fact that I restored the Sophianic narrative. I consider it to be the sacred birthright of the human species. It is not my invention. I present the world with my reconstruction and retelling. That's all. Simultaneous with that reconstruction of the fallen goddess scenario, the supreme visionary teaching device on this planet, came the disclosure of the organic light, right? The description of the properties and behavior of the organic light, right down to the way it feels like cool melon on your skin. And if that's caught your attention, then I need to remind you of the risk I took by presenting that information, if you want to call it information. Not a personal risk to myself, because I'm fearless in that respect, but the risk that somehow, in some way, due to the extremely problematic and unfortunate conditions of our time, that others might not be able to bring themselves to that experience. But some have. Some have begun. And maybe you as well will fall into that company of the Grail. But whether you do or not, you can join the company. That invitation comes at humanity's finest moment, which is now. So there is so much to celebrate in this challenge. And so we sail on in that challenge and in that incomparable moment, in this incomparable moment of opportunity.